My name is Ryan Winnie. I'm the Director of Product Design at Emmi Solutions. Emmi is a healthcare communications company that creates multimedia programs that engage patients on a variety of content and subjects across about 40 different clinical specialties and across the continuum of care. Our design team works to apply academic and practice-based research to and in our human-centered approach to design to consistently improve the efficacy of our products. Now, one of the things that we talk about at Emmi is that the way we engage patients is capable of enabling them or inhibiting their capability for health and well-being. One of the things we like to say is there's no net neutral. We're either creating capability for health and well-being, or we may be inhibiting it. So we know that how patients experience care, including communication and support beyond the four walls of the care setting, influences outcomes. And to underscore what both Kevin and Daniel have said, and to kind of double underscore the importance of the work that they're doing, Galen mentioned Martin Fishbein earlier, and this is a quote from one of his last papers. The better we understand the variables that guide health behavior in a particular population, the better able we are to design interventions to change the behavior. So let me play a quick little clip here of the Emmi program, and then I'll kind of unpack some of the pieces.
Now, as you may know, the goal of colonoscopy is to look for early signs of colon cancer or other problems. You're getting a colonoscopy to catch problems, if you even have any, like colon cancer, before they become serious. A colonoscopy also checks for bowel diseases or any bleeding in your colon. Let him know if you have any health conditions or allergies. Also, for your safety, it's important to list out everything you take, but this includes aspirin, all prescription and over-the-counter drugs, herbal supplements, vitamins, and recreational drugs. It's especially important to tell your doctor if you take any insulin or pills for diabetes, arthritis medicine, heart medicine, or even vitamins that contain iron, like some multivitamins. Your doctor may have already told you to stop taking some of these a few days or even weeks before your procedure.
So a case study for you that we studied with Dartmouth and around the preparation of colonoscopy. So our study group was the folks that looked at, that received our preparation program, and then the control was the regular stack of preparation surgery prep documents. Here's what we found. The study group reported being 11% more knowledgeable, required 18% less sedation medication, and had a 14% decrease in procedure time. Galen mentioned, again, the integrative model from Martin Fishbein, which says people act on their intention when they have the necessary skills and abilities and when their environment is not impeding or holding them back. That is when a behavior takes place. So if you can bear with the research paper diagram for a little bit, I'll just want to unpack this a bit and then tie that back to the Dartmouth case study. So intention, people act on intentions when they've got skills and abilities, environmental factors are not holding them back, right? And intention is a function of three things: attitudes, norms, and self-efficacy. But Fishbein, amongst others, have indicated that attitudes, norms, self-efficacy, not great candidates in and of themselves for influencing perception. So we look at the behavioral systems that underlie those. Specifically for attitudes, we're looking at outcome expectancies. For norms, we're looking at social norms there and what people in the same social group think and of that particular action and what they are doing. Do people in that same social group do that action? And then control beliefs and perceived power, again, really underscoring self-efficacy. And so we look at those belief systems, and what we want to identify is the most salient belief statement that could influence the particular group of people or the individual person that we're talking to about a particular health behavior or around a particular topic. And where do we look is the background variables. Many of the things that that you heard before in terms of looking at past behavior, demographics and culture, predisposition toward behaviors, personality, mood, all of those things. Again, we're looking at a particular population, a particular group to understand what statements of belief that might fall in these, particularly these three categories, influence the behavior. So when you think about the Dartmouth randomized controlled trial and folks reporting 11% more, being more knowledgeable, and then also the clinical and operational efficiencies, people after the fact reported being more knowledgeable. What they weren't thinking about is they didn't stroll into Dartmouth and say, "Hey, great news! I'm feeling less anxious today. So you're going to get a little boost in your time, in your procedure time here. I mean, it's going to be a little 14% shorter. And oh, also by the way, I'll need 18% less sedation medication." So no one was cognitively thinking that. This was not a top of mind conscious thing. But what we were able to do, it turns out, is effectively target these belief systems in a way that was able to affect psychophysiological effect during the procedure. Hippocrates wrote, "It is far more important to know what person the disease has than what disease the person has." And while that can come off as a very neat and tidy truism, I think it points to something that's really important in the precision communication design process, and I think it's what it means to identify and engage a person's whole humanness. I mean, what do I mean by that? The first is people's humanness extends beyond their role as a patient, right? They are their moms and dads. They have play different interpersonal roles. They belong to schools and churches. They're part of communities. So they have more needs than just those of a particular state of condition or even a label of about a condition or a disease. Second, people's humanness extends beyond just their roles in our context, as we're talking about it with Emmy, as users of technology. Right, so I encourage my team not to use, to be very intentional about the phrase user-centered design as opposed to human-centered design. As user-centered design constrains our relationship, it constrains people's relationship to the piece of technology that they're using, and especially as we're talking about and trying to think about people's whole humanness, we're thinking about online, offline behaviors and the convergence thereof, allowing us ourselves to study with ethnographic approaches, contextual inquiry, allows us to understand their humanness more fully, so we're able to engage them on a broader and deeper set of variables. Oh, I better mention my my points of convergence on the model here. So this is a really great reflection, actually, of the approach that we use at Emmy, specifically kind of the first four there. I'll mention specifically the set goals and objectives. As we're thinking about what this particular program, as we're developing it, needs to do, those are really important and very intentional efforts, not just to get them, because what we want the outcome to be is not just to get them through a program. We don't just want them to bear the pain of having to watch a multimedia program about a colonoscopy, but we actually want to enable in them, again, grow that capability to be healthier and grow their well-being.